Elephants, unicycles, clowns, and magic. It is the opening day of the summer performance season of Circus World in Baraboo. As the story goes, the Ringling Brothers started a small circus in Baraboo on May 19, 1884. So we're on the cusp of 134 years ago. There's been something magical ever since, and we're going to talk about it. It's Circus World on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Did you go to the circus as a kid when it rolled into town? What captivated you about it? What do you remember? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Pete Schrake is archivist and curator for Circus World in Baraboo. He's in charge of all of the Circus World's historic collection, with the exception of wagons, vehicles, and buildings. He also answers research queries and runs the library and research center. So let's pick his brain. Pete, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, so today is a big day for you with the opener of the summer season. Is everything ready to go?
Absolutely. We have just an absolutely wonderful team of staff at the museum, and they're working hard. The preparations really began several weeks, really months ago, as kind of we get into the early spring. There's always a flurry of activity around the museum as we're getting things kind of cleaned up from the winter and getting the tents out and getting all the equipment around. And so there's a lot of preparation that goes into getting this ready, and so especially these last couple of weeks. And so all is ready, and we're excited to have the folks come by.
These are big tents, too. Is that right?
They are. It's a big top tent, and it's the seating. We have a large seating capacity, and it's a wonderful experience to go and watch these performances. You know, in an environment that really is similar to not only what you would have experienced any time in the last 150 years, but something you can still actually experience today. There's something like 50 different circuses still on the road today in the United States. And so to have that kind of experience, which is really kind of a unique performance experience, is something else. But, you know, we have other performance venues. We have the Hippodrome, which is a wooden structure which was built back in 1963 and has countless performances, or Kid World performances, and a vaudeville act show put on by our two really amazing clowns, Steve and Ryan. And so there's a lot of things that you can see, plus our music. We have a music display and performance in our exhibition hall, our main exhibition hall. And so there's a lot of things going on this summer, but including the big top tent. So it's a great time of year at Circus World.
And you're really embracing the 1950s. Lots of nostalgia this year with the anniversary, 60th anniversary. Can you give us a preview of the acts that people can expect?
Absolutely. We have just a wonderful lineup this year. We've got Hans Kloss, and he has been actually with Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus for 8 years, and brings a wonderful dog act and pig act, which is going to be something kind of very cool to see.
What do the pigs do? I have to stop you there. I'm sorry. I just need to know. We need to know. What do the pigs do?
I honestly don't know yet myself. This is something that both David Salutis, our ringmaster, and Scott O'Donnell, our executive director, are the ones that work really hard during the winter to get all the different acts, and so they know what's coming.
Okay.
For usually every year, I'm not quite sure what to expect myself until I see the first performances.
And yeah, so way above your pay grade, Pete.
It is, but it's a wonderful part of being at that museum is that even for those of us who work there, you know, there are surprises, you know, that come up, and so I'm looking forward to seeing the pig act myself. So
what other acts can we expect?
Well, we got Vladimir and Olga Smirnov, who do a wonderful change act. This is where, as they're doing their performances, you know, Olga will literally, at a snap of a finger, change from, you know, one dress to another. And it's really a magical act. That, you know, it's one of those, how the heck do they do that kind of thing? Mm. Of course, we have elephants. It won't be Circus World without elephants. Colleen Pages is our trapeze artist this year, and she not only brings a lifetime of experience as a woman who grew up in the circus. And many of our performers did just that. They literally grew up or from circus families, which is really Colleen Page's is of the Circus Pages is one of the shows that are still out there today. And so it brings a wealth of experience. Wesley Williams and his amazing bicycle act. Now, he's returning from last year. And this is a young man who not only has unicycles of varying different sizes and heights, but has this kind of this act that he goes down a series of stairs on the unicycle and just does and juggles and does just a wonderful range of stunts with his performance. Also returning this year, we have our two clowns, Steve Copeland and Ryan Combs, who again have been with a number of different circuses over their years, and in addition to working in our Big Top show, have their own vaudeville-style show in our Hippodrome called Nothing But Nonsense. That had premiered last year, and so they've brought that back with some new gags and some new skits to kind of amaze and thrill our audience. We also have our Tiger experience. Ryan Holder, who was here, has been here for the last couple of summers, has his Tiger adventures, and that's something that really is really worth coming in itself. Ryan is also a performer, works with a number of different circuses in the fall and winter and spring. But at Circus World, he talks about his experiences working with the animals and training the animals, and is there to really educate and answer questions. And so though it's a performance, it's very much an opportunity for folks to come up and to talk with, you know, a genuine performer who works with these amazing animals. And so it's really something else. You can see firsthand what it's like to work with these wonderful animals. And then we also have our musical team and our ringmaster, David Salutis, who has been with our museum for many, 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 many years.
This is quite the production.
Oh, it is. It always is. It always is. And really, I think, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into putting on, you know, this, you know, the shows during the summer. And actually, the two gentlemen I was going to mention next have a big hand in that. Larry Stout is our musician, who not only does the music for the Big Top show, but also works with David Salutis. And we have a special exhibit in the Feld, in our main exhibit hall, the Feld exhibit hall. And it's a compilation of historic circus instruments, unique circus instruments, shaker chimes and bell chimes, an air calliope that was used on the Ringling Brothers.
So that's right up your alley as a curator.
Oh, it is. It is, and they put on a wonderful show, you know. And they play all these instruments almost simultaneously. And so it's really something to see. It really is.
We're talking with Pete Schrake. He's archivist and curator for Circus World in Baraboo. You can join in your remembrances of the circus, 800-642-1234. Do you buy a ticket when the circus rolls into town, or do you travel to one to experience the magic? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Pete, so this year marks the 60th anniversary. What was it six decades ago that prompted the creation of this historic Wisconsin site?
It was a team effort. Even back then, it was a team effort. Largely spearheaded by John M. Kelly, who was the former longtime attorney of the Ringling Brothers. And late 40s, early 1950s, Kelly, civic leaders in Baraboo, the Wisconsin Historical Society, especially Clifford Lord, who was the director of the Wisconsin Historical Society at the time, had all kind of come together in this idea of preserving the circus heritage of the country. And Baraboo was a natural choice because Baraboo was the hometown of the Ringling Brothers Circus, which at that point, there were more shows on the road at that point, but by that point, the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus was the dominant circus in the United States.
They'd carved out their niche. And we're going to pause in your story right there, talking with Pete Schrake, our guide. He is Circus World's archivist and curator as Circus World's summer performance season opens today in Baraboo. You can join in with your remembrances of the circus coming to town, 800-642-1234. Have you been to Circus World? What did you think of it? Maybe you grew up in Baraboo or live there now. Why do you appreciate a community that embraces the circus? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. It is Wisconsin Weekend, and we're talking Circus World in Baraboo. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're experiencing the world's largest collection of breathtaking circus parade wagons. We're feeling nostalgic and reliving the 1950s when Circus World first opened to the public. Pete Schrake is Circus World's archivist and curator. You can be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. What's different about modern performances from the shows you've seen over decades? Do you think it's better, or are you nostalgic for the big top? Did your parent buy you a ticket when the circus rolled into town as a kid? You can call in with your memories, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Pete, where we stopped in the news break, it's the 1940s, early 50s. Mr. Kelly, the Ringling Brothers lawyer, is looking into this thing called Circus World he wants to start up. Carry on with the story.
Sure. Well, he is a part of this team of individuals, including local business and civic leaders in Baraboo, and the leadership at the Wisconsin Historical Society. And they from the very beginning, there was never any question that it would be in Baraboo, because Baraboo was the home of the Ringling Brothers. This is where they started their circus business. But also, it's in Baraboo that there is still that tangible link to the past with the historic buildings. Much of the original winter quarters that the Ringlings built here still stand. And these buildings form the core of our museum today. But back in the 1950s, starting with the purchase of the Ring Barn, and then later the Camel Barn, and then eventually the Elephant House, since then, decades later, we would acquire more and more buildings. But starting with those early buildings, there was a place to have that museum, a place to call home, a place that you could walk the grounds that the Ringlings walked, you know, where the horses were trained, where the elephants were trained, where the wagons were refurbished. And so it was always from the beginning, Baraboo was going to be the place to have the museum. And Baraboo, in addition to the Ringlings, has a rich circus heritage going beyond just the Ringling Brothers, although most of our circus heritage here in this town surrounds the Ringling Brothers in one form or another. There is, of course, our winter quarters that we have. I believe it's seven. We have seven of the original buildings. There are several other original winter quarters buildings that are not on museum property. But the Ringlings had two sets of cousins, the Golmars, that had their own very successful circus, that had their own winter quarters just about a mile away. Here in town. And then another set of cousins, the Mollers, who had a wagon and carriage shop downtown, and they built circus wagons. And then a number of performers lived in town, and including actually a family, the Rooneys, which were a notable acrobatic, bareback riding act family. And they had a training barn kind of on the northern end of town, which actually still stands. It's a part of an apartment complex today. And so to have a museum in Baraboo is very, very, very fitting.
It was actually an industry. Circus was an industry in Baraboo at that time.
It very much was so. You know, Baraboo was a community that has been the county seat of Sauk County since the 1840s, has been a railroad town and a mill town because of the river, but really since the 1880s, the circus. has been really a crucial part of the identity of this community.
So I understand you love the wagons on display, that you have a soft spot for all these wagons. What kind of collection exists, and especially the wagons?
It's the largest collection of its kind, and that's not meant at all to downplay the importance of other collections out in the United States, but we have over 200 historic vehicles and wagons in our collection. Many of them have been restored. There are several that are still in original condition, but most of them have been restored, especially back when we were doing the Milwaukee Great Circus Parade. And a lot of them were acquired in the 60s, 70s, and 80s for that parade. Although we are still acquiring wagons. We got one, a set of three, as recently as 2011. And so it's three actually unique wagons that were built for what we call tunnel cars. These are coach cars that were modified with the ends cut off, and smaller wagons would be rolled inside these long railroad vehicles for protection. And these were built in the 1920s, and so very unique building structures. And that's the thing is that most of our wagons, these are handcrafted items, and these are items that the carvings on them, the unique construction behind them, it's the very purposeful nature of them. I mean, everything from cage wagons to commissary wagons to electrical light plant wagons. There's a pragmatic functionality to a lot of the behind the scenes of the circuses, and that's the thing about the wagons, is that they are both a showpiece, but they also have a practical functionality to them. And we have a gentleman in our museum who has spent 40 years now taking care of them and restoring them, Heavy Burdick, who has a unique set of knowledge on them, and that's why I always clarify that, though I work with the collections, when it comes to wagons and historic vehicles, I can't hold a candle next to someone like Heavy, who's spent his lifetime working with these vehicles.
And people can see up close restoration of one of these wagons, is that right?
Oh, yes, they sure can. They can literally walk amongst the wagons themselves. We have them actually at different locations around the museum grounds. But we have the Depe Wagon Pavilion, named after one of our longtime family supporters of the museum, the Depe family, a member of the Depe family sits on our board today. But you can walk amongst the wagons, you can actually touch them, and there is a huge long building where you can actually see them up close. But next door is the Chappie Fox Restoration Center, where we have more wagons on display. But in an area where there's a big, long set of glass windows where you can look into our wagon restoration department and actually see us either repairing wagons. There are a handful that we use during the summer for Baraboo's Circus Parade Festival that we have in July. But also new restoration projects. For example, right now we are in the finishing stages of restoring a pony float, a fairy tale float that was built in 1882, and it's part of a set of three that we have. The three surviving wagons from a set of seven.
So 1882—that's a couple years before the circus started. Is that right?
Yes, this is a wagon that was made for the Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Gotcha.
And,
okay.
And our collections, actually, even though we're in the hometown and the original winter quarters for the Ringling Brothers Circus, our collections focus on and span hundreds of different shows.
Okay.
Going as far back as, like, I think one of our oldest artifacts is a newspaper advertisement for the first circus performance that ever occurred in the United States in 1793, the John B. Ricketts Circus. And then all the way up to the present, we collect contemporary circus records and material today. So if it's a part of the American circus history, we want to have some representative element of it in our collections. And so our wagons really represent that. And this wagon in particular that's being restored really does represent that. These are this was a set of seven, part of seven floats, and it's that represent different classic fairy tale themes: Cinderella, Mother Goose, and this one is the Old Woman in the Shoe, and it's all hand carved. But what's really cool about this one, and the reason why I keep coming back to it, is it's gold leafed. And so if you've never seen gold leafing before, you want to come to Circus World this summer, because between now and the early part of the middle of July, we're finishing up the gold leafing on this. And that's something, too, where I mentioned, you know, before, I'm still learning stuff, you know, and I some of these acts I don't know. Same thing with things like wagon restoration. I've never seen gold leafing before until this spring, and to actually watch it. And that's kind of a fascinating process.
Well, right, an old world process. Carolyn from Oshkosh called in to share her story about her daughter's first elephant ride, which was at Circus World. She remembers that her daughter, who's now 25, smiled the whole time. And Carolyn added that the circus event she saw at Circus World was the best one she's seen. And Carolyn doesn't remember how old her daughter was. She was very young, but the memory stays with her. So elephants certainly, Pete, very much a part of the tradition.
Very much so. Yeah, there is an old kind of saying that you're not a true circus unless you have elephants. That goes way back. The Ringlings, early on, in their first season or two, didn't have an elephant, and it was only after they got their first set of elephants that, you know, they felt they were a part of a, you know, that they were truly a circus. And so elephants are part and parcel with the circus experience. But I can relate to your call, though, too. My son Ethan is an avid elephant fan, and every year comes down to the museum just to ride the elephants. And it is it's a unique experience. Where else in the United States, let alone where else in Wisconsin, can you ride an elephant?
So in January, Circus World became part of a state agency as the Wisconsin Historical Society took charge of operations. What changed with that transition?
Well, to the public coming to the museum, you are not going to perceive a change. The museum looks like it did and operates, going to operate like it did in years past. And the Wisconsin Historical Society has been very adamant in that, you know, this new development is not about changing what makes Circus World Circus World. It's behind the scenes. It's operational. It's funding. For moving forward, a significant portion of our operational funds now come from the state of Wisconsin, which this is very fitting. From the very founding of the museum in 1959, the buildings, the collections, the grounds have all been the property of the state of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Historical Society. And we were the only site in the satellite of site, or the constellation of sites, I should say, that the Wisconsin Historical Society maintains, that didn't really receive operational funding. And that goes back to an original experimental model that was created in 1959, where the state owned the site, but it was managed by a private nonprofit entity, Circus World Museum Foundation. So we were always kind of an outlier in that regard. Running a museum is difficult. We're always, struggling to find new revenue streams. We made an ask a couple of years back to see if we could receive a portion of our operational funding. And Governor Walker was very kind enough to add us into the budget. And as a result, we became folded into the state operations. And so the stuff that what you really, for us, the change is more we're a part of the larger family of the Wisconsin Historical Society now. We can draw upon those resources more now. Not that we couldn't before. The Wisconsin Historical Society has always been wonderfully supportive of the operations at Circus World, but now more in a direct way. And the real changes are behind the scenes, you know, how we pay our bills, you know, and how we file this form kind of thing. So to the general public, you know, there's no difference.
Well, you have people who want to talk with you, Pete. Let's go to Tony in Egg Harbor. Hi, Tony.
Good morning. This is a circus trivia question regarding the circus when it would come to town, that the sheriff would remove the nut off the wheel of the circus wagon, and they wouldn't get it back until the circus paid its tax, and the expression become, "I have to make my nut." Have you ever heard the correlation?
Absolutely. There's a number of kind of classic phrases that are unique to the circus, almost to the point where the circus community has its own language, and there are actually books out there on circus phrases and terminology. Another one is, you know, "I hope you have straw houses." And, you know, if, you know, when you kind of hear that, it you kind of quirk your head, and straw houses essentially mean, you know, that it was, you know, they would actually lay down straw and sawdust inside the big top tent. And so straw houses meant that you ran out of seating and people were sitting on the straw. So essentially standing room only, you know, that you had a great attendance turnout and great success. Making your nut like that as well is, you know, the caller's story is correct. Yeah, it was, as circuses would come to town, they often had to pay local ordinances and various local fees just to show in a place. And depending upon where you're at, town officials would, not every town did this, but it was not uncommon for the town officials to remove these big, huge nuts that secured the wagon wheels so that the show couldn't go to the next town until they paid their fees. And so, you know, over time, that translates to the circus, you know, "We made our nut," is a phrase that, well, at least we broke even, kind of, is kind of an equivalent expression to that. We made enough to get to the next town. And so you made that baseline, that essential part of your income.
Let's go to Brad now, waiting in Whitewater. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi. I was curious about the history of the circus train and why it ever disappeared. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Why it disappeared or why it never I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the end of that question.
Brad, can you... He just dropped off there, so we're going to have to kind of extrapolate there.
I could elaborate, I suppose.
Yeah.
The circus train, there, he might be referring to the historic sense. I mean, for at one time, circuses historically traveled across the country by train, although they didn't start out that way. Circuses were wagon shows, or what they would call mud shows, that would go overland from town to town on wagons. And then by the early 1870s, someone had the bright idea of, well, maybe we can put our circus on a railroad and travel across the country. That idea actually got its start in Wisconsin, in Delavan, where you had two great promoters, Dan Costello and William C. Coop, who convinced P.T. Barnum to come out of retirement and lend his name to their new circus. Barnum and Bailey's P.T. Barnum Circus. They put their show on a train, and they made at that time something like $400,000 in a year in 1872, and it was an astronomical sum. And the light bulb went on to every circus around the country that if you want to be successful, you need to get your show on the rails. And of course, at that time, railroads were developing and building up around the country.
We have to pause right there with Pete Schrake getting questions about circus history. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the circus conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. The Ringling Brothers started a small circus in Baraboo 134 years ago, and the rest, as they say, is history. We're talking Circus World on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. The Ringling Brothers moved their circus from town to town in small animal-drawn caravans. These caravans that we're learning about are housed as part of the museum collection. Their circus rapidly grew, and they were soon able to move their circus by train, which allowed them to have the largest traveling amusement enterprise of that time. Pete Schrake is taking us through the history. He's archivist and curator for Circus World, gathering your remembrances as well at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite memory of the circus? Which images flash before your eyes, or what tastes or smells flood your senses just thinking about it? You can call in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Pete, where we left the conversation was in 1872, when there was just a banner year with, in terms of the money that came in to see the circus. What was going on?
In that particular story, you had the first real experiment in putting the circus on the rails and mounting it on a train and traveling across the country. And it was a smashing success, a huge financial success. And so for most circus businesses, and there were quite a few in the country at that point, it was, the message was clear. If you're going to be a success, you got to get your show on the rails. And so that started a trend that came to dominate the circus business, that you were a railroad-mounted show. Now, I think the caller was talking about what led the circus, the trains, to kind of disappear. You jump ahead to World War One. By 1918, you have most of your circuses are still railroad-based. You do have a couple of what they call the mud shows, which are the wagon overland shows. But as a result of World War One, you start to see a surplus of trucks, especially after World War One, and trucks created for the war effort. And again, in Wisconsin, there was a circus out of Sheboygan, the Sel Sterling Circus, that was starting up, and they got the idea that, hey, we can buy trucks cheaply, put our shows on the back of a truck, and hit all sorts of smaller towns that don't have railroad access. And there's a whole market there that is waiting to be tapped into. And so really starting with the World War One era, you start to see the emergence of truck shows. With then the advent of our county highway system and our state highway system, rural roadways became easier to travel. And as you get into the 20th century, you start having less and less railroad shows and more truck shows. And so really by, last year when the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus went off the road for the last time, they were the last great railroad circus. And so it was kind of the end of an era in that regard. Now, another question, I think, was, why did the Great Circus Train end? And that was the train that the museum had produced for many years, and that took the circus wagons from Baraboo to Milwaukee. And that was in part due to the fact that the parade had ended, and that was due to finding sponsors. The parade is a very costly venture. And so there's a couple, I think there's a couple of questions that
yeah, folded in all at once. Well, take us to modern day, because Phil in Milwaukee emails and says, why do you continue to use animals in your shows when so many groups like SeaWorld, Ringling Brothers, and Barnum & Bailey are eliminating animal acts from their venues?
Well, I would counter by saying that there are a number of circuses that still have animals in their shows. And there are those that are making that choice, but it comes back to the fact that the animals have always been a part of the circus experience. And the part of the experience is to watch the amazing feats that can be done, watch the trainers interact with their animals. It is a part of the circus experience. And there is a lot of care that goes into the taking care of these different animals. For the circus performers, the animals are much a part of their family, as is anyone else. And that's where, actually, if you come to Circus World this summer, you can see that firsthand with Ryan Holder and our Tiger Adventure, where you can actually see a real bona fide circus performer. Ryan has worked in the business for many years. And is performing in our off season, in the fall, winter, and spring. But he comes to Circus World and talks to people about his experience training the tigers, performing with them, why he does what he does. And so really to answer that question, I would say, you know, don't take my answer. Come to Circus World and talk to Ryan and learn from someone in the business themselves why they do what they do, why it's very important, and what it is like. What is that experience and how they do it?
And, Pete, in these acts, is there this element of danger that also plays into the audience intrigue?
There is, but you know, it's that's not just, you know, the animal acts. That's the actual live acts themselves. Aerial acts, you know, and, you know, our bicycle acts. I mean, when you talk about Wesley Williams, you know, when he does his stuff, he's high up on a unicycle and up on a makeshift stage, you know, goes up and down, you know, a set of stairs, you know, and we actually require the audience to be quiet when he does it because it requires his concentration, because he could easily fall, and when he's going to fall, he's going to fall from a great height, you know, onto objects possibly, you know, and so our aerialist, you know, Colleen Pages, you know, I mean, she's high up, you know, she's not attached to a wire or a safety harness doing what she's doing, you know, and so it can happen. I mean, you get, you know, you grab something wrong. I mean, even the most trained performer, you know, can have a bad day. And so this is a real experience. You know, there isn't anything kind of CGI or made up when you come to the circus, which I think is also something that is why people are still drawn to it.
And, Pete, we're going to have to stop right there. It has been such a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for asking.
And good luck with today's opener. Pete Schrake is archivist and curator for Circus World in Baraboo. He's in charge of all of Circus World's historic collection, with the exception of wagons, vehicles, and buildings. He also answers research queries and runs the library and research center. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life, and we'll stick with the circus theme. Here's Erica Janik.
Bill Madison fell in love with the circus as a kid in the 1930s. Though many of us joke about running away to join the circus, Bill actually did it. Though a career in the circus wasn't for him, Bill channeled his passion into lovingly crafted miniatures that fill his Madison home.
When I was 7, 8 years old, my grandparents, the parade went by their house in La Crosse. That's where my parents are from, and so we were up there visiting. So we sat on the curb and watched it go by. It was magic. When I was 13 and 14, right, Natty, my birthday's in August, so it's in the middle of the summer. I wanted to have a little venture with them, so I kind of took off. In 42, World War II had just started, and it was at that period that I connected with Ringlings. If you were warm, the circus wanted you, because such a shortage of help immediately, you know, because I wasn't draft age or anything. I was on the backside of the elephants and horses with Ringling, you know, cleaning up after them. No, it was a lot of really hard work. You'd start at like 6 in the morning from off of the train, and then you're lucky if you got to bed by, say, 11 or 12 at night. My father knew immediately where I went, and he called the sheriff, and they got telephone call back and forth, and finally the guy in charge of the comedy, Blood was his last name, he got on the phone with my father and my dad and that, and he said, well, I'll have me home in time for school, that I wouldn't miss any school.
When did you actually start building circus models?
The first wagons, what I thought were wagons anyhow, were Kraft cheese boxes. I don't know if you remember those. They were wood. And then I used Chinese checkers for the wheels. You know, you punched a hole in the middle, and that was a wagon. Got acquainted to things in the circus. You start to make them look more like circus wagons. And
Can I see where you do your work?
Absolutely, yeah. It's downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. You can go first, because if I fall, I have something to land on.
There you go. I'll catch you.
Yeah. Wow. Right, here's the... See, I'm building in the early 20s. So I liked the spoked wheels. They weren't pneumatic wheels, or all of the artwork on them, you know, the carvings and scroll work. They weren't just boxes with hauling tents. do that. Now, this one is 70-some years old. You can see how the doors warped on it. Now, this was a ticket wagon. This was made out of, you know, balsa wood. See, it doesn't weigh anything. It's just real small. In fact, the wheels aren't even perfectly round because I didn't have a lathe or anything in those days. And I just carved them. Everything's animated. And like the Barker, I went a friend of mine who was a Barker in the show, and he did a recording for me. So on the come along on the Midway, play that, and it's him talking. And it's, you know, professionally done, and that's really neat. I kind of like the wagons that did things. If it was a band wagon, I'd put the band on it, and so it would play. And I made a calliope with a boiler in it, and that generates steam, and I got made it whistle so I could play tunes on it. And I really liked making it so that they're as authentic and as accurate as I could. Everything works on all of them.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here in the morning show. Do you know happenings in Wisconsin that could reach all corners of our state? Let us know. We may produce a show about it. Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. And we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. This Wisconsin Weekend was produced by Keely Baltina and Brianne Shasso. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.